Welcome, everybody. We are getting ready to get started. Let me give you a heads up on what's going on today. First hour, we're recording the Power Hour. Joining me, Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power, and also some other guests we'll be introducing at the beginning of the show. So what we're doing right now is we are lining up calls about engines, maintenance, troubleshooting, fuel mileage, anything related to what's going on over there at Pittsburgh Power. So right now, you've got a great opportunity to get in with any of those calls. We will be screening for those calls only in the first hour. If I have some extra time, I will try to get to some of the other calls, but this hour is really dedicated to engine-related calls. I'm looking at the board right now. If you press 1 on your phone, you've got a great chance of getting through, but this hour goes pretty quick, so you want to do that as soon as possible. Press 1 on your phone with any kind of engine-related call or topic. In the second hour, we'll be doing destination health. If you have a health or fitness or question about diet, lifestyle, any of those things, you can also press 1 on your phone right now and we'll start screening those calls, but we will be holding those till the second hour. But the sooner you get in with your question, the sooner you press 1, the better your odds are going to be. Questions are a little light right now, but the calls are starting to come in heavy. So jump in and join us. We're going to get started. Here we go.
To the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, darted as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, building a fleet, you name it, we'll tackle it here on this show. All you have to do is give me a call. But if you've got questions about anything at all, you come to what we do here. And we're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. I do want to let you know this is a special episode. This is the Power Hour. Joining me will be Bruce Mallinson and others from Pittsburgh Power. And we'll be taking your calls and answering your questions about everything engine related, troubleshooting, fuel mileage, performance, you name it, we'll talk about it. So we are going to bring in Bruce and some others, and then we're going to get to your calls here in just a little bit. So, Bruce, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. As always, it's a pleasure to work with you on this show.
To have you here. We're loving this show. We're doing this every week now. We're getting great feedback about it. Who else is joining us today?
Well, I have an old employee that was with me 30 years ago that is now back, and he's our technical director. He is a Formula Mazda racing engineer. He's been engineer of the year several times. I met him when he was 15 years old at Summit Point in Winchester, Virginia, when I was road racing my 66 Corvette. His father was racing a 67 Big Block. And when this young man, his name's Johnny Walco, and I think we can call him John now because he is 49 years old, but I knew him as Johnny. He knew as much about the mid-60s Corvettes as I did, and I held the track record for 7 straight years at Nelson's Ledges Road Course, so I really knew a lot about these cars. So I said to him, when you get out of high school, if you want to work on diesel engines, come and see me. The day after graduation, he was at our doorstep. I hired him. I was in the process of building my first twin turbo system, and I showed him what I had and what I wanted it to look like, and he took it from there, and it was an instant hit. Cummins engineers said you've got a chance of 1 in 100 to match the two turbos and the piping properly. We hit it, John and I working together for the first time. We took a Big Cam 350 that had fuel turned to it that was making about 26, 28 pounds of turbo boost, and we pounds our very first try. Well, John's been back for a month now, and a lot of good things are happening, so I want to introduce the world to John Walco and also Leroy Pershing, our electrical engineer is on. And,
all right, well, let's bring
I'm going to let them go.
Bring those guys on. Yeah, let's bring those guys on. John and Leroy, welcome.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, great to have you. We're excited about this. I've heard lots of good things.
That's good. So it's really a joy to be back with Bruce and in the diesel industry again. I've spent the last 18 years either running my own race team or preparing cars for customers and getting them to the track and working hard at that and eked out a survival. It was a hobby that kind of got carried away and turned into a business, and before you know it, I'm 18 years into it and still wondering, how I'm going to make it next year. And I got a phone call from Bruce back in November to talk about cars, and the light came on, and I told him I'd been struggling a little bit. And just like right out of high school, he had a place for me immediately.
Well,
and,
we are
really
certainly excited to we're certainly excited to have you back in the trucking industry. Bruce and everybody else over there at Pittsburgh Power is doing amazing things. We depend on them for a lot of help and support here on the show, and we love doing projects with them, and having somebody like you back there is exciting. So we're looking forward to it. Bruce, Leroy, John, anything you guys want to open with today?
I want to say one thing, that John will be with us at the Louisville Truck Show, and he will be with us at the CMC as we're building. Right now it looks like we're going to be building a 14-liter Detroit at the CMC.
Oh,
and then I'm
good.
I'm
looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's a 14-liter. It's an engine that we worked on years ago. The guy absolutely loves it. He finally wore it out. I think it's a million-plus miles on it, so it'll be interesting. The truck should be into our shop shortly. And on last Saturday, we made remarkable improvements on a 2015 ISX. And I'm going to let John and Leroy, being it was John, Leroy, and Ethan on the dyno, I'll let them tell you what they were able to accomplish.
We were able to reprogram an ISX. We took the guy from, 408 horsepower and 1,300 pound-feet of torque to 650 horsepower and over
2050.
Yeah.
At the wheels.
Yeah, and 2050 at the wheels on the torque. With all emission controls in place and working, he's been out working it all week. No forced regens, no check engine lights, nothing, and all the emission controls are in place right now. He's not got back to me on his mileage improvements yet, but he feels it's getting a little bit better than it was before.
Outstanding. Hey, I know you guys have more to say about that, but I want to jump in and clarify something, because I know this, people might be missing this. Bruce, when you talk about horsepower, Leroy, John, when you guys talk about horsepower and torque, you all really tend to say at the wheel. That's you're measuring it on the dyno, it's at the wheel. But almost everywhere we see it, if we see an engine is 515 horse and 1750 foot-pounds of torque, that's almost always measured at the crank, right?
Correct. Yes,
that is.
Yeah, so I want people to realize that when we're referring to it, especially on this show, and you guys are talking about what you're doing, that's at the wheel, and roughly that's going to be at the crank would be about 15% more, right? So if you're talking about 600 horsepower at the wheel, then we'd have to add 15% to match it to what we normally see written everywhere else if we're talking apples to apples. Is that about right?
That's correct. Yeah.
That's a good generality.
The way you do it is you take, if you have 500 horsepower to the ground, and that is what we give the D-Deck 3 Detroits now because of the type of connecting rod and wrist pin they have. You divide it by 0.85. That comes right out at, well, let's just see. That comes out to 588 horsepower at the flywheel. Now, the older trucks, you had to divide by 0.8 because they weren't quite as efficient through the transmission and the differential. A lot of engineers on the OEM level still say you lose 20%. Let's be conservative. Let's say we lose 15%.
Got it. I just wanted to make that clear because I know we talk a lot about horsepower and torque here, and we're referring to it at the wheels so people understand what that really means. When they see it written somewhere else, it's almost always referring to the crank.
Well, here, like on your truck, I think we put the 580 code in it. You're a D-Deck 4. So divided by, take 580, divided by 0.85, that gives you just a mere 682 horsepower to pull your RV.
Yeah, which all I really know is it makes me smile when I drive it.
That's the key. When you can smile at your truck and it makes you happy, then we've done our job. So long as you get good fuel mileage and you get longevity. And properly driven,
now,
we have proved it over 39 years. That a performance engine properly used will outperform and out-fuel mileage and outlive a stock engine because it doesn't have to work so hard.
Absolutely. To give you an update, that truck is now making somebody else smile. I sold it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't seem right. It had so many upgrades and modifications. It didn't seem right to just have it sitting around only working once or twice a year. So we made somebody very happy. And I'm waiting to hear back from them soon. But they were pretty happy driving it home. We're going to get to a break. We'll come right back. We've got probably a couple more things. Then we'll start getting to your calls and questions. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Joining me from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce Mallinson, Leroy Pershing, John Walko. We are talking about everything engines. And, guys, we're starting to see some calls and questions pile up here. Anything else you want to get to?
Yes. We're going to have to stop taking personal checks. We had, if everyone listening has a pen and paper, I'd like them to write this phone number down. The guy's name is Mike Heidenreich, 608-558-7038. He wrote us a check on a closed account for $478. All we did for him, Kevin, was replace the battery in his ECM and fix some other problems. And we had to take the ECM off, clean it, repair it, put it back on. I had Dwayne Erke call him because he won't take our phone calls, and now his voicemail's full. And just to find out, is he having a hardship? If he's having a hardship, call me and let me know. We'll take payments from the guy. But there's no return calls. He said his truck's running great, and he acted like there was no problem with the check, but that the account is closed. So this is the second time this has happened in the last several months. So I just have to make a decision, no more personal checks. Cash, credit card, comm check, wire transfers, things like that. But Mike Heinrich, Heidenreich, 608-558-7038. If anybody knows him, give him a call. Tell him to get in touch with us so we can work this out. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, you
I'm
know,
turn the show over. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, finance has kind of moved on. You know, checks at some point they just won't exist anymore anyway. So, you know, we're moving on. I'm seeing the calls pile up. So talk about moving on. Let's get to South Dakota. Merv, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, guys.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
I had you look at an oil sample a while ago, Kevin, and I had some high fuel dilution in there. I've been trying to determine what the issue is, and I've been thinking it's an injector O-ring, but just recently I've noticed a leak at my fuel pump, my fuel transfer pump. And I'm not sure if it's oil or if it's fuel leaking out of it, but I'm wondering if that could indicate, if that external leak could also indicate that I'm getting fuel through the pump into the engine.
Which engine do you have?
It's a C15 and an 03.
So it's an MBN or a 6NZ, doesn't matter, fuel pump.
Yeah, it's a 6NZ.
I would replace the fuel pump because that is lubricated with oil. And so you have fuel and oil mixing right there. So I would replace that fuel pump.
Okay, so that is definitely likely. Okay, thank you. That's all I've got for today.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, that was an easy one, Bruce. I've got the oil sample here in front of me, and you know, I think this one definitely could be that fuel pump, not an injector, because it's staying pretty consistent. Even though he's got the oil in there for quite a long time and the rest of the sample looks good, that fuel dilution is staying pretty consistent, right about 4.3%. If it's injectors, we usually see it climb. And, you know, this seems like a good way to go on that one.
Well, think about it. It's a 2002 engine. So how old is it now? About 14 years old.
Probably
the original fuel pump. Those things run forever on those Caterpillars. It's time to replace it. It served its purpose.
It has. So that would be a good place to start. Like I say, it doesn't look like injectors from that oil sample.
That's a fairly easy repair as well. That's right on the front of the engine there. It's not that bad to get to.
Yeah, that's nice. Sometimes if we're not positive what something might be, I hate to throw parts at things, but every now and then you need to go somewhere, and all those points make sense. It is got a lot of miles on it. You've got your use out of it. It's not that major of a repair. And if you do it and we still have a little fuel dilution, you haven't really lost anything. Now you know you've got a good new fuel pump on there, so I don't mind seeing that.
Hey, Kevin?
Yeah?
When you have the fuel pump off, it makes it much easier to change the torsional damper on the front of the crankshaft. So now's the time you've never changed the damper to change the damper along with the fuel pump.
That's a good point. That makes it even better. Let's see. We are off to California. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin.
And Bruce.
What's on your mind today?
I got a 2011 International ProStar with a ISX15 pre-DPF. It was one of the ones before they changed over to the 2250 engine. It's still the old CM871. And I am, every so often, I am getting air in the cooling system, and it's overflowing my reservoir.
Well, that sounds like a head gasket problem or possibly a minor crack in the head. John, do you want to add to that one?
No, you're right on with that. That's the first thing I thought. It's pressurizing the cooling system. You've got some compression making its way into the cooling system there. And we've seen and heard of some cracked heads with ISXs, and they don't run a whole lot of protrusion, and it's possible, could possibly be the gasket as well.
All right, because the shop said they tested the system while it was running for combustion gas, and even though it was bubbling through the fluid, it wasn't changing the colors. They don't think it's got anything wrong with the combustion side.
Well, think about it. Was it on a dyno when they were running it? Were they running it hard on a dyno as if you were pulling a mountain?
No, it's just an idle.
Yeah, you can't do it on an idle. You have to be under full load and making heat. So get it on a dyno or try to get into our shop. I know California's a long way. Maybe you're on the East Coast. And we can run it at full power and see if it's still doing it.
All right, because they're saying possible air compressor or turbo shaft seal.
Hey, we just had a DDEC 5 in the shop with a cracked head, and it was a Detroit. It was only 30,000 miles since it was rebuilt in Chicago, and we had to put another head on it. So it can be. As far as the turbo putting air, the turbo cannot put air into the radiator unless it was coming through your air compressor. If the head's bad on the air compressor, it's possible that could be putting some pressure in your radiator. Other than that, that can't happen.
All right. Appreciate it, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Let's see. Bruce, I'm sure you guys have to get really, really frustrated with this. Some of the answers that come out of some of these shops. Yesterday, we had a caller who was down south. It wasn't all that cold. It was a little cool. Truck just would not come up to temperature. Obvious first thing, thermostats are stuck open. He pulls into a shop. This is not just a little shop. This is a truck dealer. The mechanic starts looking at the truck, grabs the radiator hoses in and out, and says, they both feel the same. It can't be the thermostats.
There's only
what do you even say to something like that?
That's about the opposite of the case there, isn't it?
Exactly.
that's when you say the thermostat stuck open, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The radiator only drops 15 degrees from top to bottom.
Yeah, so first off, would we be able to tell? And sometimes you can feel that difference, but if there's no difference, that would be the indication that it is the thermostat stuck open.
Exactly.
When the caller told me that, it took me a couple of minutes because I was trying to figure out what I was missing. And, sure enough, it was thermostats. And, they had tried to tell him it was a bunch of other stuff. And the day before he had been in Wisconsin at like minus 10 and the truck was holding temperature just fine. They started to tell him it was so cool out. It was like 40 some degrees. It was so cool out, that was the problem.
Hey, Kevin.
It's frustrating. Yeah.
Good help is hard to find.
Yes. Yes, it is. Let's head off to a break, and then we will come right back and we'll get to more of your calls and questions. The website is letstruck.com. Grab something to write with. When we get back, we'll give you the contact information for Pittsburgh Power. Always have lots and lots of questions for them. We can't always get to them all, so we'll let you know how you can get a hold of them. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Joining me from Pittsburgh Power today, we have Bruce, Leroy, and John, and we're taking your questions about everything, engines, troubleshooting, mechanical, fuel mileage, performance, you name it. We're going to get back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Carl in Missouri. Carl, welcome to the program.
How you doing today there, Kevin? Bruce,
good.
And your buddies. I've got a 3406E Caterpillar, and the Jake brake went kaput on me a couple of months ago, and I've had about two or three guys, different people, look at it. Gave me two or three different answers, supposedly fixed it, didn't. Check engine light. When I flipped both of the, when I flipped the Jake brakes on both sides, they the check engine light comes on, and it just barely flutters. I mean, it just, they just real small instead of real loud, you know, or holding back. And so the last guy looked at it, he put some kind of diode or a little box, electrical box or something that goes in there, and he said that the wire that goes down to the battery is what's causing it to miss. And I fixed it, and I went down the road bobtailing, and it seemed to work okay. And then as soon as I hooked it up to a load and went down a hill, same thing's happening now. So I was wondering if maybe Bruce could enlighten me, maybe what else I could check or how I might fix that.
I'm going to attack the mechanical side, and I'll let Leroy have the electrical side. Have you started the engine with the valve cover off and had somebody work the Jake brake while you're looking to make sure that you don't have a crack in the Jake brake and that it's just dumping the oil overboard?
I don't know. I haven't. Now, I've had, when they looked at this, the covers were off because I had an upper crankshaft and lifter arms and stuff replaced on it because it was pitted. But that was found during an overhead. So looking at it while it's running, no, I don't think that's what's happened. I mean, I didn't do it.
And the next question is, your engine's between a 95 and a 98, so there's a lot of time on it. Have you ever rebuilt the Jakes with a rebuild kit?
Not since I've had it. It was rebuilt. It had an in-frame done on it about 400,000 miles ago, but it had like 900,000 miles on, a million miles, I think, when they did that, but I don't think there's been a Jake brake kit put in it, no.
Okay. Rebuild the Jake brakes. Buy the kit. The kits are pretty economical. It's less than $200, I think.
Right.
And put the new solenoids in it, the new spools and new springs, and clean it all out. Get little brushes and go in the oil passageways because they do build up some carbon and residue from the dirt. And Leroy, have you run into this on the ECM side?
Yeah, we just had one about a week ago on a cat. I think it was an Acert, but same kind of deal. So it's fairly easy, straightforward. There's three pieces of the puzzle: that you got your ECM, you have your wiring, or the Jake solenoids themselves. So you can activate the output inside of the ECM. Any dealer should be able to do this, and you can even have the access to be able to do it yourself. But anyway, so you have three things that could fail.
Hook the computer up to, the computer up to the ECM, and there's an adjustment in there, you say?
Yeah, if you get the laptop with the software on it or your dealer, you can just hook up to the truck and activate the outputs. And if you have the valve cover off, you can see if the solenoids are firing.
And you
do that for the low and the medium. There's only two circuits. You have your low and your medium, and your high stage is low and medium combined.
Right.
So it's either your ECM is not turning it on, you have an open circuit, or you have a solenoid itself is bad. That's the only three things that it could be.
I think it was a solenoid, what he said he replaced when he had the cover off. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, if you have those
replaced,
he put
a new solenoid on it, but, you know, whether he I know he doesn't have a computer to check it, so I don't know whether someone's looked at it while the cover was off to see. And I don't know if the Jake Brake kit's been put in it, but I'm going to have all that done, you know.
Yeah, if you have the solenoid, you already replaced the solenoid. The only thing left is the wiring and the ECM.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much, guys.
If he's in Missouri, why don't he just bring it up to our shop and we can fix it? We'll be out in one day.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
That's an easy one, yep.
Okay. I might just do that. I've got to go.
All right. Good stuff. Let's see. I'm looking at the clock. I think we can squeeze in one. If we have to carry it over through the break, we will. We're going to head up to BC. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Good. I got an oil sample that Lisa should have pulled for you to take a look at. I already changed the oil on that because it was at a severity 3 and it looked like the base was too low. And I wanted a question for Bruce. Last week you announced that you had a DD15 power box, and I have a DD16 600 horse 1850 torque, and I pull Super Bs in BC, Alberta, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. So I'm 105.5 when I'm in the States, and I'm 139 when I'm in Canada. That's gross pounds. And I'm just wondering if there's any benefit in purchasing one for a 16.
I think absolutely I'd put it on. I have to make sure that the 15 box is going to work on the 16. And right now I don't know why it wouldn't. But yes, it would be a great advantage to you. You should see some serious fuel mileage gains because of the weight that you pull. The harder, the heavier the weight, the better the power box responds.
Okay, yeah, I'm only empty about 400 miles a week, and I run about 2,400 miles a week, and I'm seeing about 5.3 right now. That's U.S. miles per gallon. And I'm not sure where I should be at. I'd like to get to 6. If I only do loaded one way, I am over 6. But loaded both ways, I've dropped down to 5.3, and I'd like to get that back up. Detroit told me it's only the stroke that's different between the two engines, so I didn't know if there was something else that you guys didn't need additional programming for a 16, or just plug and play like a 15.
Yeah, just plug it in. So give us a call and let's get one on its way to you. You could be the fourth or fifth person to have one.
Okay, I'll call after the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, Brad, I've got your oil sample here, but I'll say, you know, the same thing. You are one of the ideal candidates for a power box. You're going to love driving the truck. Fuel economy should come up. So on the oil sample, I'm going to make a couple recommendations here. One, I would get this oil out of there. This
I already changed
oil,
it.
Have
I
you?
Changed it before Christmas.
Okay, good. So I'm looking at it, and you had the Castrol 1030. Is that what's always been in it?
Yeah, when I spoke to the Detroit shop that I deal with and told them I was going to go with OPS and extended drains, they recommended keeping the oil that comes in it or converting it to an AMS oil. Synthetic, and AMSOIL is ridiculously expensive up here for me to get. So I kept with the stock, and they said they have no problems with me doing extended drains.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with extended drains at all, and I'm just not a big fan of AMSOIL in trucks. I just haven't seen great performance out of it. I don't
so
see
the cost
a
is
lot
what
hurt
me.
Of... Yeah, and that's fine. Like I say, I don't see great results with it anyway. I don't see a lot of samples with this Hyperion oil, but something's not working well in this engine and the oil. It's been a long, steady increase in a lot of stuff, and we normally don't see that. Let's wait and see what the next sample looks like. And give me a call when you get it. But if we come back with some of these high numbers again that early on, I would just recommend trying a different oil. Every now and then, we just find some engines don't like some oils, and there's no real pattern to it. But I get oil samples that kind of look like this. There's no real reason why we're seeing some of these increased numbers. The physical properties of the oil are just fine. yet we're seeing base dropping for no apparent reason. The oil's oxidizing. We're seeing a buildup of wear metals. And we have thousands of trucks on extended drain. So it's not the fact that, you know, you're extending the drain. It's just something doesn't seem to be going real well. So let's see what happens on the next sample, and then we'll see what to do. I've got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll get to some more of your calls and questions. Stick around for more stuff. Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We are heading into the fourth segment. We're going to try to get to as many of the Pittsburgh Power calls as we can. Bruce, when we come back out of this break, I'm going to come to you, give out the phone number and that kind of stuff. Then we'll get to as many calls as we can. Now would be the time to start lining up your destination health questions. We'll be coming back in the next hour talking about health, fitness, diet, all of those things. So get those questions lined up. If you press 1 on your phone right now, you've got a really good chance of getting through on Destination Health. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. Joining me today, this is the Power Hour. Joining me is Bruce and Leroy and John from Pittsburgh Power. And as usual, we never get to all the calls and questions. So, Bruce, why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of you?
Our phone number is 724-360-4080. If you want I have a fairly new email address. It's BruceM@PittsburghPower.com. And remember, Pittsburgh ends in an H. But the best way to get us is to call, and we do have a lady that answers the phone.
Yeah,
you don't have
person.
To press one.
She's nice too.
And you don't have, you don't have to press one for English either.
That's right. Let's get to some phone calls, see how many we can knock out here. Let's go to Ohio. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Bruce. Hi, John. Hi, Ethan. My question today, I got a 12-7 Detroit. Was ZDEC 2, now it's ZDEC 4. Ethan's done his magic. 642 to the ground on the second setting, 462 on the low. I got over 9.04 miles a gallon last year hauling light loads for 8 months. Do you recommend the BorgWarner turbo or the Pro turbo? And what about extrude honed everything in the turbo?
Don't want to extrude honed turbo because the turbine housing is cast iron and it really hardly does anything. But on the fresh air side, the aluminum side, take the compressor housing off. And where it sits up against the wheel, that's called the volute, take and polish that and make it look like a polished aluminum wheel. And that'll give you another 2 or 3 pounds of turbo boost, plus it'll allow the boost to come on sooner. And really, you're supposed to take that off every 30,000 miles and wash that in solvent, but it does. But I don't know what that Pro turbo is, but the BorgWarner turbo, we use a BorgWarner turbo. for the Cats and the Detroits, and for the Cummins we use the Holset turbo. So I'd stay with a BorgWarner. If you make power, you might want to go with our little bit larger one that we use on the 14 liter.
Do you think if I went to the larger turbo, it would hurt my miles per gallon when I don't need the power?
The turbo would spin a little bit slower, and it would come on a little bit slower. So are you must be a real gentle driver to be getting that fuel mileage. Are you driving 58 to 62, or are you driving faster?
I got my average was 59 for the year using Kevin's fuel gauges, but for 8 months it was only 8,000 pounds on the flatbed, and I was empty 80% of the time. Now I'm back to 7.24 miles a gallon for last winter anyway, so back to general freight on a flatbed. So now my weights are way up, and my fuel mileage is, mid-sevens right now.
I think you ought to stay with the turbo that we use on the 12.7.
Okay.
Okay.
Alrighty, thank
one
you,
of those
Bruce.
70, if you were a 70, 75 mile an hour driver, I'd say then let's go to the bigger one. And, Kevin, we still get those phone calls every day, people complaining the fuel mileage that are driving 75 miles an hour. And you have to, the rest of the story on that one.
let me jump in because I still get the question. Well, I know I should run slower if I want to get good fuel economy, but I have hot freight or I got to get there or dispatch is pushing me. I run 70 to 75. What gears are going to get me good fuel economy? None. We could gear the truck maybe a little better for that kind of speed, but you're not going to see any real improvement in fuel economy, very minor, because the gearing only changes the engine RPM. The engine RPM has some effect on fuel economy, but not a lot. What happens
right
when we go fast is we increase all of the forces that affect fuel economy. Wind resistance goes through the roof. Rolling resistance goes through the roof. The engine's working harder all day long, no matter how we gear it. And you're just not going to get better fuel economy at those kind of speeds. And people somehow seem to get the impression that if they just get their gearing right, they're going to drive these speeds and get better fuel economy. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Kevin, I know you. I've never driven with your scan gauge because keep in mind everything I drive is a mechanical engine. But with the turbo boost gauge, if you go 60 on the level, no wind blowing, and look at your boost, then hold it at 65 and then 70 and 75, you should see the difference between 65 and 75 is about 100% more horsepower. So let's say you can go 65 at 12 pounds, but it takes you 20 to 24 pounds to go 75, the writing's on the wall. You've doubled your turbo boost. You've doubled your horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah, and gearing just isn't going to fix that. It may have a tiny impact, but it's not the gearing or the engine RPM that's causing the problem. It's all the physical forces, the air resistance and the rolling resistance on the ground. And the other thing I try to tell people, as much as I talk about low rolling resistance tires and I believe in them, they are very effective between 55 and 65. You get up to 70, the rolling resistance on the tires doesn't make much difference anymore. In fact, once you get above 70, it's hard to find anything that really helps with fuel economy.
What people need to understand about the aero drag is aero drag increases exponentially with speed. It doesn't go up. It's not linear. So the amount of drag created between 50 and 60 is far less than the amount of drag created between 60 and 70. So there's a big, big difference there that a lot of people do not understand.
Yeah, we've been trying to educate them, but we still get those questions all the time. They just think that I can give them some magical gear ratio and it's going to, get them good fuel economy at that speed. Let's try to get to some more calls. Let's go to Ed in Alabama. Welcome to the program.
That'd be it.
How you doing, can we help you with today?
I am leasing a 2014 Volvo 780 with a D13, and it's the dual torque motor. And I was trying to find out what are my options as far as power and fuel economy gain. And also I had a couple other questions, but I'll let y'all answer that one first.
Well, guys, I'll jump in on that one because I there's a couple things here. Ed, I'm going to tell you that you should think long and hard about getting out of that lease and getting out of that truck. That engine has never been a good performer. Looking at a 2014 with all the emissions, this thing's going to kill you in the long run. The lease will as well. And there really isn't a whole lot you can do on that engine. Now, you could do the fast, you could do a fleet air filter, and then I might be out of ideas. So, Bruce, do you guys have anything else you could do on a D13?
Those two items, and we could port and ceramic coat a factory manifold for them. The factory manifold would then flow 20% more exhaust. And we have found, like, whenever we did that on that little on the Mercedes, like the one you used to have, Kevin, I think we gained 45 horsepower on the Mercedes by porting the manifold. Now, that's we have to buy the manifold from Volvo, and then we have to send it to the port shop, and then it goes on the flow bench. It takes about 6 weeks to get that manifold back. We did one for a C13 for a guy in California. He was thrilled with it. C13 A6,
yeah.
That is. So the Volvo, I'm sure, would gain, too.
I believe that because that engine, to me, feels just like it's horribly choked off as far as air in and out. So fleet air filter and that manifold should help that quite a bit. Bass is going to help with some fuel flow. But Ed, you're pretty limited on the engine on that one. What else can we help you with?
Well, some of it is a fuel issue because I noticed, like, I know of another driver with the same company has truck set up the same way, and she's doing. My friend said she's averaging about 8 miles a gallon and loaded heavy. I'm doing right around 6.
I hate to do it. There's lots of things I could say about that, but be very careful of those kind of comparisons. She could be reading ECM fuel economy, which is way off. Every truck's different. The driver can make a 35% difference in fuel economy. Boy, the time snuck up on us, guys. I really appreciate you guys joining us, but this for power, and we'll do it again next week. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutten. All right, everybody, we're getting set up for the Destination Health Hour. I just want to say thanks and goodbye to Bruce, Leroy, John. Anything you guys want to say before? Well, we wrapped it up, but we'll do this again next week. Bruce?
Oh. No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right.
I don't have anything else to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. We kind of ran into the end of the show there quick, so I wanted to see if there was anything before we let you go.
No, we're okay. Just anytime anyone's in Western Pennsylvania area, stop and see our dynos, our engineering center, and our new shop.
Will do. Great stuff. Thanks again, as always, and we will talk to you next week. All right. So we are heading into Destination Health. If you have any questions at all about health, fitness, diet, lifestyle, disease. This is the time. If you press 1 on your phone right now, you have a very good chance of getting through. So we're going to go ahead and get started, and we'll start screening those calls. So press 1 on your phone right now if you've got anything at all. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to our world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health, the show where we talk about everything related to your health, your fitness, your diet, lifestyle on the road, and we certainly wrap it all around that trucking lifestyle. Living and working on the road is a challenge, but it doesn't have to mean that you have to give up any part of your health. We have a mission here on this show, and the mission is not to make truck drivers as healthy as the general population, because honestly, the general population is not that healthy. Our mission here is to make drivers in the trucking industry a shining example of what could happen with our health if we do the right things, even with all the challenges you face on the road. We've got lots of ideas, tips, tricks, strategies, and support to help you do that. Kim, welcome back. So great to be here again.
It's good to be back. These weeks go so fast.
They do. They do. I have lots of stuff I want to talk about today. I see some questions are starting to line up. Anything you'd like to talk about to start off today?
Yeah, no, I was actually thinking about that too. I guess I want to hear from people and have them press one and share, you know, what, and you share that in the open too, but, you know, what challenges they're having, how can we support them, and let us know, because that's what we're here for.
Yeah, you know, this show really follows the same model I've used on my show for years as far as trucking goes, the same model I've used for the last couple of decades helping owner-operators. Our model really is find out what the challenges are, what kind of things are causing our listeners and members problems, and then I'd like to go do the research, go do the testing, go talk to people, go build relationships, find the best solution, and then bring that solution and make it easily available. We've done that in trucking. We've done it in fuel mileage, tires, oil, money, all kinds of things. And now we're doing it in health. And we're off to a great start. We've been helping a lot of people, but you're right. We're looking, what are the challenges? We know some of them. We've talked about some of the big ones. There are a couple of them. I'm still working on finding some solutions. One that I've talked about in the past is the danger of just sitting for so long. Mm. There's a lot of new research about that. And, you know, in an office, not that big of a deal. Even if you sit all day long to do your job, you have lots of options. Stand-up desks are becoming popular. Treadmill desks aren't unheard of. Or you can just get up out of your chair once an hour, do a little stretching, walk around. It's easy, but it's not easy in a truck. To stop a truck to get out and stretch or take even a short walk, you really lose a minimum of a half hour, more like 45 minutes or an hour if you're going to do any kind of walking or, you know, exercise at all. And you can't do that every hour. You'd never get anything done. So we're working on that one. I see that one as a challenge. We know that the food that is easily available on the road is horrible. But that one can be overcome. It requires a little bit of work, a little bit of planning. You might have to go out of your way once in a while, but that one we can overcome. We have some great ideas for people. So we're looking, what other challenges are they facing and how can we help? So I love that One of the things that I might do today, we'll see, because we do have some calls that I want to get to. One of these times, and it may or may not be today, I want to go kind of back through the basics. You know, where I've been, I'm coming up on a year to when I really, really started to change my lifestyle and my eating habits. And I've been tweaking it and trying some different things. And I kind of want to spend some time going back through that journey and what I've learned. And the good news is, after reading over 100 books, trying all kinds of different things myself, I'm back in school now in a course that I thought I was going to breeze through, and it's kind of kicking my ass. The good news is, like most things in life, after learning all of that stuff in depth, we can bring this down to some pretty simple things that anybody could do and make major improvements in their health. So that's exciting.
That really is, and I'm glad you brought that up, because even when people call us or email us for, you know, information, we do still have a ton of books and a ton of links for them to look at and this and that, and it can be overwhelming too, but to have you then come back and say, start here, and these are a few things you can do, I think is priceless.
Yeah, you know, the program I'm going through is the Nutritional Therapy Association. They have two programs, an NTC, which is a nutritional therapy consultant, and an NTP, which is a nutritional therapy practitioner, which is what I'm going through. They've really boiled it down to one sentence. And after all the reading and all the other research and everything I've done, this one sentence will seriously get most people to over 80% of their goal if they will follow this one sentence. And that is, and this is kind of the mantra of the NTP, on properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole food. That's it.
That's awesome.
If people, yeah, it is. It's so, I mean, we do need to explain what that means, but once you understand what that sentence means, that's really what 80% of this comes down to. Mm-hmm. Forget all the research, forget all the arguing, forget all the, you know, different points of view about carbs and fat and protein and macronutrients, all that other stuff. There's things to learn in there. But if people could just understand that if they could get back to, and I say back to because this is the way we ate for centuries, if people could get back to eating a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet, they would make such huge improvements that they may never need to know all the other technical stuff.
You know, and that's right in line with what I shared with you last week with, you know, going to see the doctor of Chinese medicine, and that that's what she said, stop tracking, away myself, not stress, and just focus on eating whole food. And I cannot tell you what that did for me last week. Just to cut the other stuff out and bring it back to that, it's hard to describe, actually, to tell you the truth, because I actually felt like I needed to have that control to do all that other stuff. But yet it was hindering me. It was, you know, sometimes too much is too much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's going to become a mantra and a motto and a theme around here. And we're going to just let people know that you don't have to complicate this. You don't have to get too crazy about all the differing points of view. Because here's the thing, whether you take people who believe in high carb diets, low carb diets, almost everybody agrees, and there's no argument to be made against this. Nobody would say, if you are going to eat a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet, there isn't anybody on the planet who knows anything about nutrition and health that would say that's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah, so we've got some calls. If we have some time, I may come back to that, but let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Pennsylvania to get started. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Say, question.
Hi, Dave.
I finally got an appointment with an NTP, and believe it or not, I can only find two in the whole state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
On that site, on that nutritionaltherapist.com site. So the gal I found is close to my home, and she was pretty hard to try to get in touch with, too. So anyways, I'm looking forward to seeing her. I just want to know if there's anything in particular, specifically, that I need to discuss with her about my keto lifestyle when I go to see her. What kind of questions should I be asking her?
Yeah, one of the things that I would ask her in the interview, because the NTPs don't necessarily focus on keto lifestyles. In fact, they don't
right.
unless they have decided to do that. The first thing I would ask her is how familiar is she with the, you know, a ketogenic diet? She may not be. I think she'll understand what the macronutrient balance is, but she may not have a lot of experience treating people with it. That's where I would start. And there's the music, so I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back to that, though. Lots to talk about today. I'm going to get to your calls and questions as well, so stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford, my co-host Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. So, Kim, we're going to get back to that call. I'm going to kind of jump in here on this, and then I'm going to hand it off to you as well, because you kind of just went through this. So one of the things that, you know, that after this year and trying all kinds of different things and hearing feedback from so many people, I am absolutely convinced that one of the best ways to get started on the whole new lifestyle and way of eating, especially if there are weight-related problems, medical problems such as diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, low energy, sleep issues, I am firmly convinced that the ketogenic diet is the quickest way to turn those things around. People respond to it very well. They lose weight. They gain more energy. All of their biomarkers improve. I also think that once you hit your goals in any of those areas, weight, blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol numbers, that you could start looking at moving towards more of a whole food paleo diet, and you don't have to be so crazy about the low carb kind of stuff. Now, I would never recommend going back to, you know, what the way you used to eat. It's funny, people say, oh yeah, the ketogenic diet works really well until you quit doing it. Well, of course, if you go back to the way you were eating, you're going to get the same results. But I think that you can transition into not being so crazy about the carbs. I've been playing around with this. I'm back up around 80 or 100 grams a day instead of 50 or 60. I'm about 2 weeks into that. So far, I actually haven't gained any weight at all. I've lost about 3 or 4 pounds, but I think it is because I've also cut out alcohol for a while, and I know that has an effect on my weight. So I think that, you know, we're getting back to that paleo style of whole, real food, nutrient dense, like we were just talking about. And if you're not fighting any of these medical problems, you don't have to stay on that strict ketogenic diet. Some people do, and they absolutely love it. It wouldn't bother me to stay on it, but I like the variety that I'm able to add back into my diet now. Sweet potatoes, some, you know, a little more fruit here and there. I'm drinking some more kombucha, which you've got to watch the carbs on that. But having the new numbers on the carbs and not being so strict is allowing me to enjoy some of those foods, and there doesn't seem to be any negative effects from that. Kim, you just went to a doctor of Chinese medicine, and I know you've been playing around with ketogenic and very low carb. So the question here, does anything come to mind for Dave that he should be talking to his practitioner about?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Great.
My question, I guess, is, you know, I fortunately had like a 15-minute phone interview with her first, so not sure if you had that opportunity to do that. And what that did for me was to know some things that I could send her ahead of time, so it kind of made the appointment I did have with her a lot more efficient. Like, I did have some current blood work. And, Kevin, I'm not sure if NCPs look at that, but I know that was just one thing, just some information. So I sent her a current blood work, and, I mean, it was 5 months old, but she was able to use that. And then I also sent her, she wanted to see if I had, like, 3 days of a food journal of what I was eating. And so since I had that on my fitness pal at that time, I was able to send her that. So I just felt that it made that first appointment a lot more effective. Like, otherwise, it would have been like another appointment before we addressed some of the things we did at the first one. So I would just maybe ask her that ahead of time. You can even call him back and ask maybe what that first appointment's going to look like, and if there's any information you can provide her before that.
Yeah, I did. She said her first appointment is going to be a 45-minute consultation and interview, which is no charge. And then quite extensive email with a questionnaire that I've got to fill out before that. And, I mean, that's going to all happen first. So great. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited. For you.
Me too. I'm excited. I can't thank you guys enough. You had really turned me around here, my lifestyle, and I seem to be working just fine. I'm going to keep at it.
That's great.
Well, excellent. That's fantastic. And Kim, isn't that refreshing? You know, so many of us are used to going to the doctor, being rushed in and rushed out, fill out a whole bunch of paperwork while you're sitting there in the office, knowing that the doctor's not going to look at it anyway. And the doctor rushes in. The average time they spend with the patient is about 7 minutes, which is no time to get anything done at all. And then you're out of there, and you get charged for a full-blown office visit. You know, this is pretty standard procedure for an NTP to get the paperwork to you ahead of time. It's really extensive about the stuff that matters, food journals, lifestyle, habits, symptoms. They review all of that paperwork before you ever come in just for the initial consultation, and it's not unusual for an NTP to do a 45-minute to an hour consultation on the first visit and not charge for it. Now, some do, totally up to them, but it's not unusual, and an hour is about average for that first consultation. They really take time. They've done more work ahead of time, and it's so refreshing to see that, because so much more gets accomplished than what I ever see get accomplished in a doctor's office.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, because they look at the whole body, and I just really, really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Florida. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hello.
I just wanted to call and say thanks to you guys for everything you're doing, and I just wanted to say that it's official. I am the new nutritionist at the Health Pavilion for GATS 2016, put on by Randall Riley. And I just wanted to say I want to see everyone there.
Oh, John, I am so excited to hear that, because I love the fact that Randall Riley's doing something. They put a lot of work into that pavilion. I was a little disappointed with the direction that it took. I didn't get to see a lot of it because I'm always busy at the truck shows, but I did see a lot of the same old tired, you know, nutritional and diet advice. And you know, I hate to criticize people are trying to do the right thing, but I also know that no matter how good your intentions are, if you're giving out the wrong information, sometimes you can do more damage than not doing anything. So it's good to see that there is going to be a voice of reason as part of that program now. That's exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm going to have, they're going to provide me with a booth, and I'm going to have some talk time, I think, at the stage. And also, I'm going to be giving out some keto cookbooks and some vitamin sample packs from Pure Vitamin Club, and maybe do some olive oil tasting so people know what a really good olive oil tastes like for anybody that comes by the booth.
Oh, I love that.
That's refreshing
that it's a focus on whole food. I went over there just kind of wandering around last year, and people recognized me, so they stopped me and started asking me health-related questions, and I happened to be standing by a booth, and there were a couple of nurses in the booth, and we got into this long conversation about high-fat, low-carb, ketogenic, paleo, whole food, and I was answering a lot of questions, and I happened to notice that the nurses were like rolling their eyes, and I ignored it for a little while, and then they were doing more than rolling their eyes. They were like and making all kinds of noises, and I thought, okay, I can't take it anymore. So I asked them, I said, ladies, what's the problem? And they really said, well, the advice you're giving is just dangerous. And instead of arguing with them, I said, well, explain to me why, and where, you know, what research are you working on? And knowing that, unfortunately, nurses like doctors get zero nutritional education while they go through the program. And what they do get, unfortunately, is usually sponsored by big agriculture and big food companies. And if they get any at all, it's usually wrong. And I was trying to be really nice, and I was, but they just didn't have any facts. All they were doing when it came to any kind of nutritional advice was just repeating what they had been told and what the system had been telling them. And one of the ways I know that is because if I were to ask them the question why, they could almost never answer it. And that's one of the things I try to get across to people. And I'm going to get to a break. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kev Trostberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Tim Cockerham is my co-host. This is Destination Health. Joining us right now, John Reed. So, John, Kim, one of the things, and this is, I started doing this and getting other people to think about this long before I started doing the health thing. This is just about advice in general. There are lots of people in the world who give advice. I'm certainly one of them. And I would challenge people to do this with me as well. Anytime somebody is giving you advice or informing you of something or trying to tell you what how things are or what you should be doing. After they make a statement, I always like to follow up with why. And you would be surprised how many people give advice, they make a statement totally confident sounding, and when you ask them why, they look at you with a blank stare and they stumble and they have a hard time explaining why that statement might be true. And that's usually a pretty clear indication that all they're doing is repeating something they've heard somewhere else.
That's a really, really good point to make, because I even find myself that I need to, because I don't remember things as well. And so it makes me have to back up and make sure that what I'm saying or what I believe is true. And that's, we should constantly ask ourselves that, as well as others, like you said.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just why. The other thing I found is sometimes they may know what they're talking about, but sometimes if you ask them why, the reasons are very different from your own. So even if they know what they're talking about, asking the question why may uncover, you know, for example, you know, I'll throw in something that I was just talking about. If somebody asks me what, you know, what I recommend for a way of eating, I may recommend the ketogenic diet. If they ask why and I start saying, well, it's really good to help you lose weight, it's really good for your blood pressure, it's really good for your blood sugar, it can improve your cholesterol numbers, they may say, well, you know what? I don't have any problems with those things. I'm just wondering about my long-term health. Well, that would be a very good piece of information. Maybe they don't need to do something as drastic as a ketogenic diet. And I don't want to scare people away from it. I love it. But I also know that some people don't want to eat that strict and would like more variety. So even though my advice would have been good, my research would have been sound, I understand what I'm talking about, asking why may lead to a better answer for their situation. So it's just a really good thing to do when you're getting advice, talking to people about things like this. So, John, I know we haven't talked about this a lot yet, and I might be putting you on the spot a little bit, but you're also going to be helping us at the CMC, right?
I am going to be at the CMC. I was there last year. I'm definitely going to be there this year, and I will help out in any capacity that you wish me to.
Well, absolutely, and I have lots of plans for you. Like I said, I might be putting you on the spot. But, you know, giving seminars, doing some one-on-ones, helping people, you know, all the things we do at the CMC, we are really excited about having you there.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be there. I won't take very much more of your time. I just wanted to give out the information. I want to see everybody there because I know that you and Kim don't have a lot of time to talk with people. I know you have a lot of more questions. So I will talk to you guys later, and you have a wonderful day.
Fantastic.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for the call. Again, congratulations. That's exciting. Like I say, I stopped over at the health fair there last year. I love what they're doing. It's new. It's going to go through some growth phases, but I'm really excited to see, John, that you are a part of that and heading that up, and I know that will really take that program into a good direction. So that's exciting. I would love to get involved some more in that. I'm just not sure if I can. We're pretty busy at that show. We do the partners in business there. Anything I could help you with, if I can, I certainly will. Kim, so, you know, we talked about you had gotten into a doctor of Chinese medicine, and we talked a little bit about it last week. You mentioned today that you're feeling better and you like some of the things that are happening. Anything else about that?
Not quite yet. It's kind of interesting. My biggest challenge was having to be patient with it, because sometimes it isn't a quick thing that we're used to wanting quick answers. So it's just staying the course. It's mostly just dealing with the enzymes I'm taking now before each meal to try to get my body to absorb the nutrients. And it'll take a little while, but I'm just looking forward to just staying this course and adjusting as needed, which is what I did based on the keto diet. Because when I first did the keto diet in 2007, it was strictly to lose weight. So when I started it again to lose weight, I had other things in my life that was different. I wasn't doing exercise and stuff back then. So, and that's what I think we share with people too. It's all an individual basis. You know, find what works for you. And so I've had to add back in like some blueberries and sweet potatoes to get a little bit more carbs in to support the kind of lifestyle I want to have now. But that's the exciting part, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of had the same experience. When I did the, you know, keto last year, just about this time, I also started doing some real high-intensity workouts. Lisa was gone. I was kind of home alone. So even after working a really long day, without Lisa being here, I felt like there were just hours during the day where I wasn't doing anything. I didn't want to work anymore. I was already working a lot of hours. But, you know, if you're – and I wasn't sleeping all that great back then, which was one of the things I was trying to fix. So in the beginning – if you're only sleeping 6 hours and you're working 15, that still leaves 3. And I don't like just sitting around watching TV. Reading was a part of my work day, so I had already read for several hours. And I thought, what am I going to do at this time? So I thought it would be a great time to exercise, no distractions. And I was working out intense but short. I was only doing anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes a day, which really isn't a lot. And I wasn't doing it every day, actually. I was doing it about 3 or 4 times a week. And that, in combination with the keto diet, actually caused me to lose more weight than I wanted to. I had gotten down to the lowest body fat percentage of my life, under 10. And I was down, I kind of bottomed out under 140 pounds. One day I got up and weighed myself and I was 139 pounds. I haven't been that weight since a senior in high school. And it was, I didn't really want to be that light. It felt good and all that. So because my schedule got kind of crazy and a lot of other things happened, I'm not doing those kind of intense workouts anymore. In fact, right now I'm not working out at all, which I do want to change. But I will absolutely up my carb count again to kind of offset all of that activity.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
So, yeah, so it's interesting, you know, to learn these things. But really, I want to keep going back that in all this experimenting, all this trial and error, all these things we talk about, that it really comes back to the single biggest change I made. And what I would recommend for everybody else to focus on, don't get too deep into the details, don't get too deep into the controversy. Focus on that idea of eating a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet. If that's all you do, that is going to make a bigger difference than anything else. The same thing happened to me when I started studying money and finance and investing and retirements and all those things. You know, I spent 3 years in school. We learned all these crazy, complicated formulas and theories and, you know, all this stuff. And basically what it ended up coming down to was most people, if they would make a couple simple changes in their financial life, spend more than you earn and start saving some money, that makes 90% of the game. And it's so simple. You don't need anybody to show you how to do that. I just told you in 30 seconds. And yet we sometimes get so wrapped up in the complicated stuff that we never get to the simple stuff.
Yeah, you know what, Kevin, and hearing you say that again too, the properly prepared nutrient-dense whole foods, I would love to see, and maybe even it's next week, you know, we still got John on, you know, see what he does. We'll come back to this.
Yeah, we'll get right back to that right after this. Stick around, we've got more stuff coming. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford, my co-host Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. Kim, why don't you pick up where you left off there?
Yeah, because when you know, I love that whole statement, the properly prepared, nutrient dense, like whole foods. So I would love to hear what people are doing on the road to make sure, you know, that they make that happen. Because some can see that as a bump in the road on while they're out on the road. So it'd be great to hear some strategies that people do to make this happen.
Yeah, you know, why don't we stay on that topic for a little bit? Because I think this is something good to understand what that statement means. Because once you understand the meaning behind it, then it becomes pretty clear and it makes a lot of this easier. So I'll go back. One of the first things that I started reading a lot of when I first started this research was all the problems created with grains. You know, the book Wheat Belly, Grain Brain, Dr. Mercola does a lot on grains. And based on what I was reading, I just decided to eliminate all grains from my diet. You know, there was a lot of evidence that they cause a lot of problems. They have chemicals in them called anti-nutrients that actually block our body from absorbing the other nutrients. And it's interesting that for many, many decades now, we've been enriching all of the grain products with vitamins. It's actually required. The government requires that that happens because they knew that the grain itself was blocking the absorption and they had to add more and more vitamins and minerals back in to the grain products. But we also know that a vitamin-enriched product is nowhere near mm-hmm. as good as the original vitamin that should have been in there and all of its cofactors and all of the other things that occur naturally. So I decided I'm just going to eliminate grains. That was probably the single biggest change I made with the biggest impact. So many things improved when I eliminated grains from my diet. Doing the research and now going through the NTP program, they don't necessarily recommend no grains. They will acknowledge that there's nothing wrong with it. If you want to eliminate grains from your diet, there's no downside health-wise. They don't push it or necessarily endorse it because they realize for a lot of people how difficult that is. We're surrounded mm-hmm. by grains. The answer is if you look back historically, a couple things have changed. We've genetically modified many of the grains. We've hybridized them to the point where they're not as healthy anymore. They have a lot of, I think I read somewhere the other day, over 1,000 different proteins in wheat, and they have no idea how most of them react in the body. We know what gluten does to a lot of people, but gluten is just one protein in wheat, and there are literally thousands. But if you look back historically, if we use the paired, grains should be left as whole as possible, but that's not even close to being enough. Grains should actually be soaked and sprouted. And what that does is it eliminates a lot of the phytic acid. Soaking them eliminates a lot of the phytic acid, which is one of the anti-nutrient components. Sprouting them actually allows the nutrients that are there to become more available to the body. So if you look historically, that's the way breads and products made out of flour, and I'm talking about over 100 years ago, prior to commercialization and in, you know, the industrial food supply, we used to soak and sprout grains before we would make bread and other foods out of it. I just don't see most people doing that. I'm not going to do it. I mean, I certainly don't miss grains enough that I'm going to go through all that trouble. But that also actually applies, like oats. Oats is another good example. If you go back, if you could find a box of Quaker oats, and I don't remember when this changed, but the directions on the box of Quaker oats used to recommend soaking the oats overnight. But nobody ever really knew why. That was part of it. That was the soaking and sprouting process for oats, and it made them much healthier. But it's work, and it's, you know, we want things right now. We want everything instant. And that went away. They just dropped that instruction off the box. So that was a really common way of preparing grains, because we understood how we needed to prepare those foods to make them healthy. It actually applies to nuts. Now, I don't do this. I know I should. It's one of the things that I might get to. If we wanted nuts to be as healthy as possible, and seeds, we would soak them for about 8 hours just in water. The problem then is they're not very good to eat. They're very soggy and kind of mushy. So the next step is you have to dehydrate them. So now they're going to spend another 8 hours in a dehydrator. How many people are going to take the time, and especially people on the road? It's just not real practical. If you're home for a couple of days and you like working in the kitchen, it's not a lot of work. It's just a lot of time, and it requires a lot of planning. But those are the kind of things that could very well make a difference in people's lives. So if you have an extreme case of, you know, poor health and things aren't working, sometimes we have to look, and that might be it. Those are some of the examples of a properly prepared food. The other one I know is a lot of people have problems with dairy. And dairy can have a lot of benefits. But historically, the cultures that ate a lot of dairy and got a lot of health benefits cultured and fermented all of their dairy. So sour cream was real sour cream. It was cultured. It had good bacteria in it. Yogurt was real yogurt with live bacteria in it. Kefir is a milk product that you can drink that is fermented. There are literally dozens of examples of ways to prepare dairy products. So when we use that phrase, properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole food, that's the first part of it, understanding how foods were traditionally prepared. So, you know, I could go more in-depth into that. Maybe we'll do another show on it. But you had mentioned the properly prepared, so I wanted to give a little context to that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's interesting.
Let's grab another call here. Let's go to South Dakota. Brent, welcome to the program. Brent, are you with us?
Hello.
It sounds like he's there. Brent?
Dang, because I know he's been wanting to get in. He dropped and he came back. So I was hoping we could help him out.
Yeah, they're telling me his call keeps dropping. So maybe we're probably going to run out of time if we don't get him in here kind of quick. They're checking right now to see if he is there. If not, we're probably going to have to wrap this up because I don't have time to get to any other calls. So we'll see. They're trying to get. Oh nope, looks like his line totally dropped there. And we're coming up towards the end here. So, you know, properly prepared. Another area that, you know, people don't realize, and we've given up most of these traditional ways of preparing foods for pure convenience. And I don't think we understood what it was going to do to our health, but we do now. We started off a year ago, one of our big topics was fermented vegetables, paired food. It had been done for centuries, and we gave it up in favor of canning and pickling with vinegar, and that makes a huge difference in the available nutrients in that food. When we ferment vegetables, which we've talked about how simple it is, not only do we create beneficial bacteria, we create more access to the nutrients that are in there. Properly fermented vegetables, which is simple, actually has more nutrients than fresh. If you were to go out in the garden, pick it right off the plant and eat it, you wouldn't get as many nutrients as if you will take 3 or 4 days and let it ferment. And that process is really simple. It's a quart of water and 2 tablespoons of salt. Put it in a jar, put a lid on it, let it sit at room temperature for 4 days, and you've got fermented vegetables.
And I know that's where it all started. I remember with you, and it started all with having the good gut bacteria and stuff too. So, and I still have not done fermented vegetables, so I still have to get on that Kevin, and give that a shot, because it's back to the basics, like you said, you know?
It is. And you know, I think people are a little, you know, afraid of it, but it really is as simple as what I just said. A mason jar, some cut up vegetables, quart of water, 2 tablespoons of good sea salt, 4 days on the counter, and you've got fermented vegetables. Kim, there's the music. We're going to have to wrap this up. We'll see you back here next time.
Look forward to it. Have a good week, everyone.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. Master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week.